This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Live and Learn. I'm Lee Chui Lin. It was World Toilet Day on the 19th of November, and it's estimated that 2.4 billion people are still without access to improved sanitation facilities, while 946 million are still defecating in the open. I speak about the health and social impacts of this with Lucy Stevens, the urban services expert at Practical Action, a UK-based NGO who carries out water supply, sanitation and hygiene programs with communities that are without proper sanitation. Lucy, Practical Action is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year. Could you kind of just tell me about the work that the organisation does?
Practical Action, as you say, we're a British-based development agency. We work in about 14 different countries across Africa, Asia and Latin America. We're particularly interested in how technology reduces poverty. And at the same time, we take a really people-centred approach. So we start with what people already have, what they know, and what kind of technologies and systems will work for them. So we work in a range of different areas, and like you say, water, sanitation, waste management, particularly for urban poor communities, is one of our key areas of expertise that we work in.
And that's kind of the focus of today's show. The Global Millennium Development Goal target for sanitation called for halving the proportion of the population without sustainable access to basic sanitation between 1990 to now. And I understand that the 2015 WHO-UNICEF Joint Monitoring Program report says that, you know, this goal hasn't been met. Could you tell us more?
Yes, exactly. And it's been known for a while that this sanitation target is not going to be met. There is some good news, though. We really started from a very low base, and actually nearly a third of the world's current population has gained access to improved sanitation since 1990. And there's a lot more discussion about the topic now. Bangladesh and Nepal in Asia are countries which have really turned things around. But on the other hand, in some places, access to sanitation has just not kept up with rapid population growth. And it's a huge problem for lots of big Asian cities and also urban areas of sub-Saharan Africa. The levels of access in some of those are actually worse than they were in 1990. So there's still a long way to go. The world has done better on water, but the sanitation target has sadly not been met.
And you referenced, you know, Asia, sub-Saharan Africa. When we look at water and sanitation, is this more of an issue in developed or developing countries? Is it a problem that still kind of crosses borders that way?
Well, it is largely a problem of developing countries. And it's particularly the case where there's a lot of kind of on-site sanitation rather than, you know, sewer connected. And I guess that's why it's more of a problem in developing countries. But at the same time, there are really big inequalities. So even in some middle-income countries, the poorest 10% or 20% of the population have really poor access to sanitation. So it is still a problem in some countries which are developing faster. And actually, I was noticing that even in some quite, you know, well-developed countries, if you look at the whole sanitation chain, it's still a problem. I know that in the world's tallest building, in, you know, the Burj Khalifa in Dubai, there's actually no efficient system to remove toilet waste. It all has to be trucked out of the city for disposal. So it does cross borders in some ways, especially when you look at the whole sanitation chain. But the largest amount of the problem and the most severe problem is still in developing countries.
So if we were to take a look at that sanitation chain then, where are the inefficiencies occurring? You know, where are the problems kind of popping up for countries who have this problem?
So what I mean by the sanitation chain is all the steps that need to be taken to have a really safe sanitation system. So you need to have safe containment in the first place so it doesn't leak out of the toilet or the pit. And then it needs to be safely emptied, transported, treated, and reused or disposed of. And that's what people talk about, the whole sanitation chain. And in rural areas, this isn't quite so much of a big issue because you can have safe containment and then you can just, you know, dig a new pit and it decomposes safely. But in urban areas where there's a lot less space and people are much more congested, it's really when you get to the safe emptying and then the safe treatment and disposal that you begin to run into a lot of problems. So experts in the field and Practical Action as well have been developing something called a shit flow diagram, which is where you look at where the big major problems are and you can find out really whether it's to do with that toilets are not being effectively emptied, so they're just leaking out and spilling and overflowing all over, or whether it's to do with actually the sort of treatment and disposal end of things. In a lot of places, a lot of the problem is a problem with emptying, and then later on there aren't adequate facilities for sort of reuse and disposal. So it's a mixture of those things.
Would it be fair to describe the lack of proper sanitation as a problem of the poor?
Yes, for sure. The burden is certainly felt most by the poor, and it perpetuates a cycle of ill health and poverty. But also, I think it's worth saying that poor people are not just victims here. They can be also the driver of some of the best solutions. So it is a problem for poor people in particular. Yeah, but they're not just the victims of it.
And you were talking about, you know, the shit flow diagram earlier. From your experience, how do people without proper sanitation facilities typically deal with their waste? You know, what are flying toilets, for instance?
Yes, flying toilets. It's particularly something that happens in African cities. And often at night, people can't leave their houses and reach any community sanitation blocks that there might be or any kind of toilet facilities. So they will use a plastic bag and then they just throw that outside, sometimes throw it onto their neighbours' roofs. So that's what's called a flying toilet. And in other places, there's a kind of hidden open defecation in urban areas because people need or end up using really poor quality or broken toilets. And so you end up with lots of sort of open exposure of faeces in different places or in what people call hotspots, where there are sort of round the corner or darker places that people will use because there's not proper access to safe sanitary toilets.
And it stands to reason that, you know, this would have severe health implications, not just for the immediate, I think really for society, but what are some of the specific health implications that you've observed? What diseases tend to be linked to poor sanitation and to practices like this?
As I'm sure you can imagine, diarrheal disease is one of the biggest issues. And the World Health Organization says that over 840,000 people die a year of diarrheal disease that's directly linked to unsafe water sanitation and hygiene. But there are other issues as well. For example, it's linked to the transmission of diseases like cholera and hepatitis A, typhoid and polio. And beyond that, it's also interestingly being linked to malnutrition and stunting in children because their guts eventually become unable to absorb adequate nutrition properly. And so it becomes linked to malnutrition as well.
Who are the people who are most at risk from poor sanitation?
Well, it's women and children under five, really, who bear the brunt. And as I was telling you about under fives, it's not only that they suffer from these illnesses, but also it can lead to stunting and malnutrition, which means that children might not end up sort of achieving their full potential. I guess also for women, it really kind of limits women's abilities to sort of function fully in society because they're not able to move about so far. They have real problems during their menstrual cycle, for example, and there are big issues of safety and security that are linked to a lack of proper sanitation, as well as girls' access to schooling. So there are lots of gendered issues related to sanitation too.
Which is something that I want to explore in a bit more detail, you know, shortly. But before that, with you know, we've kind of been talking about who this affects, how it is kind of more of an urban problem. So where is Practical Action carrying out work at the moment in relation to proper sanitation?
Yes, it is an urban problem. I guess also it is worth saying and just emphasising that the figures for access to sanitation in rural areas are actually worse than in urban areas when you look at as the whole. So 51% of the rural population lack access, but it's only about 18% of the urban population that lack access to proper sanitation. But it's this issue of inequality. So the urban poor really suffer a very big burden and have very poor levels of access. So Practical Action is working with urban poor communities, and I guess our strongest work is in Kenya, Bangladesh, Nepal, and increasingly in India. Those are the places where we've really been doing the best work.
I'm speaking today over the phone with Lucy Stevens, Urban Services Expert at Practical Action, and we're discussing proper toilet sanitation and hygiene and how to improve access to that. Up next, we find out, moving beyond health, what are the social and environmental impacts of poor sanitation on a community and a place? You are listening today to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You are listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. Joining me over the phone is Lucy Stevens, Urban Services Expert at Practical Action. And in conjunction with World Toilet Day, which just passed on the 19th of November, we're discussing what needs to be done on sanitation facilities and hygiene and improving access to both. You know, Lucy, earlier you talked about how there are gendered issues at play here and how a lack of sanitation can impact women and girls in particular. So, one part of that is, of course, menstrual cycles. How do you help girls and women with properly managing their monthly cycle?
At Practical Action, we've realized that this is a really big issue. And whenever we help design toilets or think with communities about what kind of toilets they need, we always give some thought to how women are going to use it and what their needs are during their menstrual cycles. So that means that there needs to be water nearby and enough space inside for women to wash and wash the cloth that they might have been using. Where there are shared facilities, there need to be separate spaces for women. We've also done work to increase the amount that people talk about menstruation and stop it being such a taboo subject. In Bangladesh, we've done some really important work trying to increase people's access to low-cost sanitary pads, especially for girls. And in schools, it's a big issue as well in terms of keeping teenage girls in school. And there needs to be proper toilet facilities in schools that can help girls deal with their menstrual cycles there as well. Otherwise, it just becomes too difficult for them and they'll end up staying at home.
What are some of the other considerations you might need to take into account when you are trying to design a toilet, you know, particularly when you're introducing it to an area that, you know, doesn't have these kinds of facilities?
The issues that you'll need to take into consideration, or that Practical Action we always think are really important, are to do with, well, there are a lot of different toilet designs that are available, but you need to pick the right ones that will work with the geography of the area. What kind of soil type is there? Is the water table really high? Is that an issue? Also to do with the social context, like, is this a place where people are tenants, or are they just squatting on a piece of land so they're not renting from somebody? And what kind of cultural issues are there? Are people happy to have shared facilities with a few households, or are they really keen to have their own household facilities? These are all really important factors that we'll take into consideration when we're thinking about what kind of sanitation to provide.
And Practical Action's focus, as you mentioned, you know, right at the start, is on technology. Could you describe some of the projects or programs you've carried out in communities that do lack proper sanitation?
Yes, absolutely. We've done some really exciting work in Kenya, where we've adopted what's called a community-led total sanitation approach. And I think it's a really nice example of where you need to bring together both technology and an understanding of the whole social and environmental cultural context. So one of the issues that we've needed to think about is how to mobilise the community to take collective action so that everybody in the community can improve their sanitation situation. And in that context, in a secondary city, it's Kenya's fourth largest town called Nakuru, we managed to improve over 2,200 sanitation facilities over the 3 years of the project, which benefited nearly 60,000 people. But the exciting part of that was that the sanitation facilities that we designed, we came up with some standard designs that could be approved by the local authority, and which meant that if somebody wanted to construct something, they didn't have to go through a lengthy approval process, and they knew that what they were going to be getting was going to be a good design that local artisans were able to construct. And beyond that, we linked it with some financing from a local bank so that people could afford to pay over to stage their payments to afford something better. Another project that we're really excited about is some work that we're doing in a small town in Bangladesh called Faridpur. It's about 100,000 people. And in that case, we're focusing on how to deal with pit emptying. We're working with the people who are already doing a lot of that pit emptying, which isn't the sort of formal sector or the local authority, but it's people who have done pit emptying on an informal basis. They're often really looked down on by the rest of the society, but they provide such an important function. But at the moment, they don't manage to do that job in the best way because they often empty somebody's pit but then don't dispose of the contents of that safely. They'll just empty it into a nearby drain. So we've been working with the system to help improve the technology that they use for emptying and for transporting, something that's cheap enough but does a better job and protects their health, but also what taking that waste to an appropriate place for it to be composted, treated and disposed of and actually turned into an agricultural product later so it can be used on the fields safely for farming. And in other cases, we've used some of that material to generate biogas, which you can use for providing gas for cooking for some nearby households, which is another way of making really good use of what's obviously a waste product otherwise.
And how do you measure the long-term effects or ramifications of these projects?
Practical Action has a long-term commitment to the places that we work in, and that's really important for us. So we've seen how some of the changes that we can bring about can really make a difference over time. One of the biggest issues in the sanitation sector globally is that it's really easy to build a toilet, but if you've ever used a public toilet, you'll know that it doesn't take very long for toilets to become almost unusable. So the sustainability of a good quality of sanitation provision is something really tricky in this that lots of people are struggling with. That's why a long-term commitment in particular places that we work is really important. So we've seen from some of our work in Bangladesh, for example, over the last sort of 8 to 10 years, how some of the facilities that we've put in are still really working well. They've been well maintained and looked after and continuing to provide a good service for people. And how people are telling us that although it's difficult to scientifically measure the health benefits because you need really big randomized control trials that a development charity like us is not the best place to do, but people tell us about how their health has improved and how much money they're saving in the healthcare costs that they would have otherwise have had to spend. And it's a huge issue that the cost that of healthcare that's associated with the diseases that people suffer because of poor sanitation and hygiene. So we've seen the benefits of that for people. They tell us about how it's changed their lives and how beyond those kind of monetary and health factors, they just feel like they are more included in society in their town. And how their sense of dignity and self-worth has really improved.
Has it been a challenge to approach the communities involved? Were they open to your suggestions? Were they open to the help you were offering?
One of the things that Practical Action has always done is to start with a strong relationship with communities. And so often we've worked in some of these places doing one or two different things over a long time. And we'll work with local organisations as well that have been there for some time that know the communities. So that does make a big difference in terms of building up trust and understanding what it is that people are looking for in the first place. So generally we found that where we do that, and we always work with our offices are staffed by people who are from those countries, and it makes a huge difference to how acceptable, how accepted our projects are within the different communities, because they're really led from what people are looking to do themselves. So people have been really positive about the kinds of suggestions that we've been able to bring based on that sort of trusting relationship in the first place. And a lot of people have also said that other agencies have come in and they've focused on just doing surveys or finding out the situation and taken a long time before they've delivered things. And Practical Action has always been, really keen to make sure that we don't just sort of understand the situation, but we do something practical along with the communities and the local authorities together.
If we can come back to the technical for a short while, is there a problem of improper management of fecal sludge? I mean, what are the implications of this?
Yes, it's a huge problem. in some parts in Asia, where actually access to sanitation has improved dramatically, they're calling it the second generation problem, because you're really not going to get those health benefits that everyone's looking for unless you deal with the contents of those toilet pits in a safe way. If it's just emptied straight into the environment after the toilet pit gets full, you've really not solved the situation at all. And that's why the Sustainable Development Goal that's just been agreed has included a definition which includes the safe management of fecal sludge. So if it gets directly emptied into the environment, that's, you know, that just continues this vicious cycle of health and environmental impacts. So you really need to have a better system of emptying those pits and transporting it and dealing with it properly. And we found that the only way that we're really going to be able to do that at scale in a lot of these places is to work with the people who are already doing some of that work and improve the way that they're able to do that. That's some of the informal pit emptiers whose work is often sort of unrecognised and undervalued, because people think what you might need is a big formal system and lots of big trucks. But actually they can't access those narrow, small spaces in between different small shacks. And if you just go for a big sort of formal truck tanker system, it's really not going to help people who live in slum communities who are the most in need of that help.
Looking to the future, the SDGs target for water, sanitation and hygiene is that by 2030, we achieve access to adequate and equitable sanitation and hygiene for all, and open defecation, paying special attention to the needs of women and girls and those in vulnerable situations. What does this mean exactly? You know, what does it mean when you put it into action?
The big thing about the SDG, and we're, and a lot of agencies who are working in this area really value and welcome that the world has agreed to this, is that now we're looking at good access to water, sanitation, hygiene for all, not just halving of the number, but access for all. And also it's access to a better level of sanitation, which adequately deals with the safe management of sanitation. So whole sanitation chain, not just access to an improved toilet, but safe emptying, treatment and disposal of that waste. But we shouldn't underestimate what a big challenge that's going to be, because we said right at the beginning that the world, that we've not managed to meet the MDG target, which was just to halve the proportion of people. So to provide sanitation for all, that's going to be a really big challenge. The other exciting word that's in that SDG target is around hygiene and hand washing. The World Health Organization has recognized recently just how important hand washing is. It always needs to be part of the package. And it definitely is in all of our projects. And we need to be able to see hygiene as a big part of that package. So it's really great to see that it's mentioned there in the SDG target.
What are Practical Action's hopes towards realizing this target?
We know that if you're going to reach people in vulnerable situations, if you're really going to leave no one behind, you have to focus on, yes, the rural population and the poorest people in society. But the needs of the urban poor will be increasingly important as the world begins to urbanize even more. And so we hope that the global community will continue to see a balance of the focus and continue to focus on the needs of the urban poor, who have slightly different needs to the rural, to rural communities in this goal. But their needs definitely need to be met if we're going to leave no one behind and reach everybody. So we're going to be continuing to press national governments to set ambitious targets and to take the right kinds of approaches to achieving those goals in just the 15-year short timescale that we've got. So everybody needs to really move fast if we're going to achieve these ambitious goals. But we're ready to be part of that and bring our learning and our expertise that we've developed over a lot of time to help share that with other people so that collectively we can all achieve that goal together.
For our part, how can we help or get involved?
I think one of the first things to do would be to find out more about the issue. You can check out our website, which is at practicalaction.org, and you can find us on Facebook and Twitter as well. And just to update yourself on what's going on. And at different moments, you know, we'll be calling for different things and for national governments to take action. So there will be things that people can do to call on their governments to take action. But the first thing to do will be to find out more about the issue, and you can do that via our website as well.
And as mentioned, that website is practicalaction.org, which is where you can go to get more information. Lucy, thank you very much for joining me. I've been speaking with Lucy Stevens, urban services expert at Practical Action. In conjunction with World Toilet Day 2015, which just passed, we've been discussing the importance of improving sanitation and hygiene and access to both. You've been listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.